Oh, beloved Sadhguru, improve my life, suffering from karma. I am calling at your door. This is the Bhajan Satguru Pyare Meri on page 27. I have not even a little control over you. Except you in this world, nothing is mine. I have come to your shelter. Don't reject me. I have got much suffering. No more agony. Cool my heart, which is heated by pain. Oh, beloved Satguru, improve my life. Suffering from karma, I am calling at your door. Bhajan of Sanchi on page 27.
Satguru Pyare Meri Jindagi Savara De Karma De Mare Tere Darati Pukara De Satguru Pyare Meri Jindagi Savara De Karma De Mare Tere Darate Pukare De Tere Te Guru Ji Mera Rai Rati Chorna Tere bajo duniya te mera koi hor na Tere te guru ji mera Rai rati chorna Tere bajo duniya te
Jindagi
beloved Satguru, improve my life, suffering from karma. I am calling at your door. I have not even a little control over you. Except you in this world, nothing is mine. I've come to your shelter. Don't reject me. I have got much suffering. No more agony. Cool my heart, which is heated by pain. Oh, beloved Satguru, improve my life. I want to begin today by reading a talk, which is a very important talk, in my opinion. I have always found it extremely helpful. It's called Five Dacoits Are Looting While Man Slumbers, and I have read sections of it, and Don has too, over the years. It was originally published in November 1973, Satsang Desh, that later included in the book The Coming Spiritual Revolution, which is where I'm reading it from. And in this talk, Master makes explicitly points out aspects of the path which are implicit in all his talks, in all the talks of all the Masters, but usually just sort of assumed or taken for granted. But in this talk, Master is absolutely specific about them. It's a long talk, and I'm going to read just a short section today, and then we'll continue it through the next few weeks when I do the satsang. Begins with a hymn of Kabir. Joy abounds among the righteous, but fellowship of evil breeds misery. Kabir says, go and get the company of some saint. Keep the company of him who has controlled his mind. Without measure will he give the wealth of Nam. O Kabir, he may have but a crust to eat. Shun the company of the worldly who may give you milk and honey. I ask not for powers miraculous. Kabir says, give me the Master's darshan daily. And Master Kripal comments, this is a short hymn of Kabir, the first line of which is stressing the importance of satsang. Satsang means the company of the truth, the place where truth is differentiated from untruth, where the wheat is separated from the chaff, where discrimination reigns supreme, where that eye of discrimination is awakened. If a certain person's company is praised, it means that he is wise. He is one who knows the difference between that which is true and that which is untrue. In such company, one can also learn such power of discrimination and develop awareness. Such a personality is the very image of the truth. He is the Satguru, whose soul, after gaining emancipation from the mind and senses, experiences itself and gains connection with the ultimate truth, becoming the very form of that truth. He is then only termed a Satguru. Guru Arjan Sahib said on this subject, he who knows the Satpurush, the ultimate Lord, has the name of Satguru. He is one with the true Lord. In such company alone can the soul achieve salvation. Who sees the Lord praises him. He whose mind eye is open to see the Lord, he only praises the Lord. If a soul has not realized the ultimate Lord, it means he is still at the mind and sense level, just like others who are asleep within and are the image of the world without. How can a sleeping soul give a connection with the Lord to anyone else? What happens when one meets a Satguru? By meeting the Satguru, one's own inner eye sees within the house of the body. The truth is found. One will see the truth for oneself, Nanak's emperor is apparent. He sees, of course, but his disciples also come to see. The Gurumukh sees with his eye. The disciple can also see by becoming a Gurumukh. What is a Gurumukh? He who has constant awareness of the Guru. Therefore, one should start by sitting with full awareness in the company of the realized soul. By meeting the Satguru, the gift of initiation is received, through which inner knowledge is attained. Whomsoever looks intently into the Satguru's eyes gains life, for life comes from life, with which he is overflowing, because his soul is fully developed. He has complete control over his whole being. Intellectual knowledge uplifts only the intellect. If you keep the company of those people who are involved in outer enjoyments, which are experiences through the senses, then your senses will get heightened. On the other hand, in the company of one whose soul is strong, your soul will be uplifted and you will start seeing for yourself. When you have seen, then sing. Such song will bear fruit. Sing the Lord's praises after seeing something of his attributes. That will give an intoxication and will help your progress further. Anyone can chant from the books or repeat something from hearsay. This is not truly praising the Lord. To see and to bear witness to what you have seen is something very different. The very tongue of such a person will be charged with nectar, and the words uttered by that tongue will immerse one's heart in the depth of tranquility. Satguru is he, meeting whom the mind becomes still. Pray for the company of such a soul. In the saint's company, the Lord is seen within. Then how sweet is his home. It's not a loose promise to be fulfilled after death. He says you will see the Lord in the saint's company. You will taste the sweetness of the inner nectar, the Nam of the Lord. Drink that intoxicant of Nam. The Satguru is also called Sadhu. The Lord issues forth from the Sadhu's tongue. We get many one things in his company. In the Sadhu's company, the countenance becomes radiant. The dirt is washed away. Many thousands of words have been written on the greatness of the Satguru and the wondrous things that happen to us in his company, the precious gifts we receive. From his very presence, there is a magnificent charging, emitting, surrounding him, and permeating the whole area. That overflowing love is colored with intoxicant. The true yearning is created in the Sadhu's company. Masters are the overflowing cups of the Lord's intoxicating color, overflowing vessels of love. Just by enjoying his company, the yearning for God is born within one's being. This human birth we accept so casually comes only with great good fortune. Why? You have got the human form. It is thy turn to meet God. In the human form alone can God be realized. No other action will be of avail. The soul cannot reach God through any type of actions. These only cause one's attention to become more dispersed. One can make the best use of all one's faculties, but what will really help us to realize the Lord? In the Sadhu's company, only contact the Nam. And those who repeated Nam got salvation. O Nanak, their faces radiated with glory. Those who meditated upon Nam succeeded in that purpose for which they were born into the human body. Their faces radiate in the Lord's house. Through their company, many others also gain emancipation. Gurumukh frees millions by giving a spark of Nam. What is that which is called Nam? There are two kinds of Nam. And here I think it's important to be aware that the word Nam in Hindi and Sanskrit and all the related languages means name. And in Hindi and so forth, the language that Master gave this talk in, when you say Nam, it is just as though in English you were saying name. So it would be perfectly acceptable to translate it always as name throughout. And so in Hindi, it is always that double meaning is there. In English, we tend to assume that Nam just means the sound current. But the point is that the sound current is the ultimate name. It's the name of God, God naming himself. This understanding is present in all traditions, but it's made more explicit in the Indian traditions because of this both uses of the word name. In English, we say word for the same concept, and word is means word, and we realize that, you know, they can mean either one, but when we think of Nam or name, we don't. So there are two kinds of Nam. First, God is nameless and formless and soundless, but when the absolute God became from one to many, he came into expression, and that God into expression power is called Nam. Or, and of course, people listening to Master in Hindi would have heard that God into expression power is called name. It sustains the whole of creation. By the way, when we pray as Christians, you know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. That's what we're talking about. That prayer doesn't mean, you know, Jehovah or Elohim or any of the names of God. It means the sound current. The ultimate name, the word. It sustains the whole of creation. It has been given many different names by the advanced souls to help mankind understand. Some call him Ram because he is vibrating everywhere, from the Sanskrit root Rama, meaning perpetual vibration. Some call him Vaguru, and there are many other names, all of which we respect, no doubt. I rejoice in all thy names. But what is that Nam or name which is the Nam? That Nam repeating which you will cross the ocean of life, which could also read that name repeating which you will cross the ocean of life. If every religion declares that it has such a name, then how can one know which is the true name? As a guiding criterion, we should remember that while words are all right, it is only a contact with that true Nam, that true name, that can give the sought-for salvation. That is the power which the words describe, the Nam which links you to the named. One must get the connection with that Nam, that name. This is why meditation upon Nam is very necessary. For although one can gain a little peace from the other practices, yet after a while the mind will start its racing again. One Muslim saint puts it this way, that we are repeating mere names when we should catch hold of the named himself, with whom all names are but empty words of description. How can a person have peace by repeating some words in a parrot fashion? If one repeats the word ice, 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 could one thereby experience its coolness? Repeating the word water will not quench the thirst. How indeed can the spiritual thirst be quenched by the repetition of words or by repeating the various names of the Lord? And of course that seems to contradict Master's teaching made in thousands of other places about the value of Simran. But in fact, you know, Master giving these words to, in India, an audience of probably 5 to 10,000 people, many of whom followed traditional Hindu practices, of just repeating some name which they handed down to them by their family traditions or whatever, which had no connection with the inner name, the real name at all, and very different from names given by a master of full consciousness with the purpose of remembrance, which can unite the person doing it with the real name. You know, the practice the master gives is called Simran, which means remembrance, whereas the practice that master is talking about here is called Japa, which means repetition. And there is a vast difference between the two, even though they seem very similar. Remembrance is also a form of awakening, which becomes more and more apparent as this talk goes on. What then is the Nam, or the name, which is Nam power, which is God in expression? The water of life, giver of the nine pleasures of Amrit, is the Lord's Nam, the Lord's name. It resides in this body. Nam is the giver of all kinds of happiness, and it resides in this human form, and so it is not a subject of outer manifestation. It requires inversion. Nam is intoxicatingly sweet and beautiful and can be experienced above the senses only. And what indication is there that one has gained experience of Nam? When in contact with Nam, the light vying with millions of suns is manifested. You will experience the radiation of that light. All you brothers, in whatever religion you are, do you experience the light within your own body? If you do, then know you have got something. If not, you are merely repeating words and have no connection with Nam. The Lord's Nam, the Lord's name, is the music of the spheres. There is music in the Nam, the sound which vibrates from above. If you hear the sound of the Lord within and see the Lord's light, then know that you have got connection with Nam. It is experienced only above the senses. In the company of the sadhu, you receive the imperceptible gift. It is all in the hands of the master, who will simply present this gift to the true seeker. Do you see how valuable is the company of a sadguru? What is the difference between the master and other men? Physically, he seems the same as others, just like doctors and patients. But the doctor has studied anatomy. And similarly, those people are specialized who have got self-knowledge and God-knowledge. However, they always say that they are men just like other human beings. Guru Nanak said, "In this form of man, Nanak is my name." But whom will they address as Nanak? That's the point. Sometimes masters do give an indication of what they are in addition to man. God's word, which comes from above, is given out as knowledge. The guru is the mouthpiece of God. As the flow comes from God, so the guru expresses it out. This is the principal difference. So seek the company of the realized souls, who are the very form of truth, the mouthpiece of truth. They are developed souls, although they seem to be just like us. The whole world is sleeping, rich, poor, intellectual, illiterate alike. Why? Because they have no awareness of themselves. Each man's soul is at the mercy of the mind, which is itself at the mercy of the senses, which in turn are being dragged around by the sense enjoyments. We have become identified with the body and the world. We have forgotten ourselves. Those who pursue the intellect lose themselves even more than the others, for although the illiterate are lost in the senses, yet through intellect one can get more deeply involved in the senses and the intellect both. We do work through the intellect, and it can help us to understand the true state of affairs, which is that the soul is a conscious entity, and our greatest aim as human beings is to realize God. The soul must rejoin the Lord. God is in every form. He is the sustaining power in all life. Due to this, our soul stays with the body, but when he removes his sustenance, the body is finished and returns to its various elements. Furthermore, if he withdraws his power from creation, then dissolution or grand dissolution occurs in different degrees. There is nothing nearer to us than this power of God, which is the very soul of our soul. Our soul has become jiva, soul in creation, through connection with the mind, and so the sense enjoyments drag it around. It has forgotten itself in this depth of indulgence. Together, the beloved and the soul. The soul sleeps, but the beloved is in full awareness. And the master develops this particular concept of the sleeping of the soul throughout the rest of the talk, which we will continue in succeeding weeks. And now I want to read a very different reading. This is from my book, The Years with Kripal, Stumbling Toward God. And it's about some more incidents from my stay with Master Kripal in India in 1969. And actually, it's the concluding part of that story. And that whole trip, of course, is marked by Master trying to wake me up. I mean, from my point of view, of course, there were people there beside me that he was also trying to wake up. But, you know, I was concerned about his efforts to wake me up while I was there. And sometimes I was pretty sound asleep, but there were some very remarkable incidents. Sometime toward the middle of my 6-week stay, during which time several people had come and gone, Rajiv Wazi joined us. I knew Roger slightly. He was a group leader in Montreal, had visited Sant Bani Ashram once, and was greatly respected by many in the Sangha. He was approximately my age. We had many things in common, not least love for the Master, and there was no reason, it seemed, why we should not be good friends and brothers. But somehow or other, we managed to rub each other the wrong way almost from the time of his arrival. I never fully understood what was going on then, and I certainly don't now. But before long, I was ferociously judging him for just about everything he did or said, and I had very good reason to think he was doing the same for me. But the Master had other plans. We heard that he was going to take a 2-day tour of some villages and was taking Roger and me, and no other Westerners, with him. The tour would end in Rajpur, in the foothills of the Himalayas, near Dehradun, where the Master had a house with an orchard and a spectacular view of the mountains, which Judith and I had visited in 1965. The others would be waiting for us there. This was exciting indeed, but I also felt a certain apprehension about being in close quarters with Roger all that time. The night before he left, the Master took Roger and me into Delhi with him, where he did a number of things, many of which I have forgotten, but a few stand out. As I recall, we went to a hall where the Master was welcomed as an honored guest. I do not think most of the people there were initiates, but maybe some of them were. The Master addressed the gathering, and then the host took the stage and said that he had visited Baba Sawan Singh in the 30s and had asked him if he had any disciples who were really advanced, and that Sawan had mentioned Kripal. He also said that he was convinced that Mahatma Gandhi was an avatar, and the Master seemed to agree. Of course, as a footnote, the Masters distinguish between avatars, Sanskrit avatara, who are incarnations of Vishnu, the sustainer, whose purpose is to maintain a level of justice and harmony in the world, and saints, or sant, whose function is to take children of God back home. But it is not always a hard and fast distinction. As we saw above regarding Lord Rama, avatars sometimes do the work of saints, and vice versa. From there we went to the Ramlila grounds, where the Ramlila was in fact being performed, a very different Ramlila from the one we had seen. There was a huge crowd filling the enormous stadium, which seated about 50,000 people, and it is where both conferences that I attended, the 65 World Religions Conference and the 74 Unity of Man Conference, where the main sessions of those conferences were held. And the stage was enormously high platform, so that everyone in the farthest reaches could see it. It was amplification and so forth. It was a huge crowd filling the enormous stadium, and I could see on the very high platform figures larger than life going through the story in what seemed like slow motion. They had like masks on and were bigger. They had were on stilts like that, like they say that Greek drama was done, so that the outdoor crowd, which spread off or seemed like miles, could get it. I didn't really get a clear picture of the performance, though. We had arrived near the end, and although we had taken seats in the audience, someone came and invited the master, with Roger and me, to come up on the podium. We went up just as the actors were going off stage and sat down on seats provided for us while the master addressed the gathering. Talk about strange experiences. Wow. One final thing about that night. The streets were crammed with people and cows, so much so that the car was stopped several times, once for nearly half an hour. The crowds were so massive that they surged back and forth around the car, occasionally moving it a little. But the master was an ocean of calmness, totally undisturbed by the commotion around us. At one point he commented that it was a nonviolent crowd with no ill will. Eventually we made it back to the ashram, much to my relief. You know, I have not done justice to that night in this account, that afternoon and night in this account, and there are many things about it that I know I have forgotten. While it was happening, it was incredibly surreal. It was like a visit to fairyland. You know, it took place in the middle of metropolitan Delhi, one of the biggest cities in the world. Urban stuff everywhere, poverty everywhere, stuff like that. But it was its impact on me was like a visit to fairyland. Nothing was what you'd expect. Everything was different. Everything was heightened. It's like the intoxication was there, but it didn't come from me. And it was like I was in the middle of something that was intoxicated. It has remained in my memory ever since as one of the most incredible experiences that I had with the master. It was the prelude to the tour that I'm going to read about next. The next day, the master took Roger and me on the tour. We rode in a station wagon, the master's 55 Studebaker station wagon. Roger sat in the front seat with the driver. Master was in the back seat by himself. Much of the time he was lying down, and I was in the way and back, sitting on the floor. I was in ecstasy. I had a marvelous non-stop close-up darshan throughout the whole tour. I couldn't ask for more. We drove through rural India, my first intensive look, the master wearing dark glasses much of the time. We stopped several times, once for satsang, other times more informally. In the afternoon, we reached our first destination, a tiny village in the middle of nowhere. After satsang, which was held outdoors, we all, the master, Taiji, Mohan the driver, Roger and myself, retired into a nearby house, made of bricks without mortar and with a dirt floor, to eat. Our meals were served to us on huge leaves, as is the custom in India, while we all sat cross-legged on the floor. After the meal, the master lay down to rest, and following his example, so did we. Later that evening, we arrived in a small town called Katal, the master's main destination, where he held satsang that night and initiation the next morning. That night after satsang, he sent a plate of prasad, the leftovers of his own meal, and to Roger and me. And I mention a footnote here, the three kinds of prasad, food that is blessed by the master and is therefore spiritually charged, although the word prasad actually means grace or gift and refers to anything given to the disciple by the master. It is usually used for food, the first kind, the food from the master's plate after he has finished eating. The second kind, the food given by the master to the disciple without the disciple asking for it. And the third kind, the food that is presented to the master by the disciple with the request to bless it. The first kind is very special in Satmat and is known in other esoteric systems also. It is a characteristic practice in Hasidic Judaism, for example, where disciples wait eagerly for the leftovers from the Rebbe's plate. And after that, he called Roger and me into his room and talked with us for half an hour. As we lay on our respective beds and reflected on recent events, Roger and I agreed that the master wanted to unite us in brotherhood, and we promised each other that we would honor that, and we did. There was never the slightest difficulty after that. The next morning, the master gave an initiation, which was highlighted by the presence of a ringer, someone who took the initiation in order to prove it was all fake. The master was well aware of him, gave him initiation anyway, during which he had a significant experience, and then told him, "Well, you have got it now. You're in the jaws of a very strong lion." Then we left Katal to begin the drive to Rajpur. On the way, he fed Roger and me a meal of fruit with his own hands, cutting, peeling, and handing it to us. Later, he gave us candy for dessert. Roger, who was a naturopathic doctor, very diet conscious, did not realize the value of the prasad he was being offered and turned it down. Thereupon, the master offered it all to me. I, having read all the right books, eagerly lunged for it, only to discover that it is not quite that easy. I got two of the three pieces being offered, but in my great zeal and eagerness, managed to drop one piece down behind the seat where I couldn't get it. We spent 2 days in Rajpur, very sweet days. The other Westerners, 15 or so, were there when we arrived. When we got there, I found a letter waiting for me from Judith. There had been a number of letters both ways throughout the visit, but in this one she revealed to me that she was worried about my coming home because she was afraid of my generally critical attitude toward her and my bad temper. At this point I should make it clear that while I loved Judith very much and she loved me, I could be very difficult to live with. I have a terrible temper. Most of the difficult times in our marriage came from my temper. It had been a very difficult letter for her to write, that was clear, and as soon as possible I took it to the master. I told him that I often lost my temper with Judith and that she was getting tired of it. He was not happy about it. "Well, look here," he said. "Change places with her for a week and see how the shoe pinches. They work harder than men, I tell you. Little things, but they add up. Smiling face, kind words, she'll do anything for you. Change places with her. You'll see." Not at all busy, the master had much more time for us here than in Delhi, and we met with him about 4 hours a day. He sent for me often to discuss various matters, concerning my new job as editor of his magazine, so that I really saw him a very great deal. One morning he sent for me while I was still in my room, a little stone room in the rear of the house, which I loved, and he was waiting for me on the porch. He had an article that he wanted me to publish in the magazine. I went to sit on the floor as usual, and he told me to sit in a chair. I demurred, saying I preferred the floor, but he almost fiercely pulled a chair over and ordered me to sit on it. I did, of course, and afterward I did some self-introspection about humility. Is it more humble to cling to the outward form of humility or to obey the guru? What exactly was my motivation in trying to disobey him? It is true that I derived great pleasure and felt a profound rightness about literally sitting at his feet, but it is also true that on this particular occasion I was worried about appearances, about not appearing humble enough if anyone was looking. And while I was sitting on the chair, I was very nervous whenever anyone walked by. On the last morning in Rajpur, I left my room at dawn and went down to a cement reservoir at the back of the retreat, where the view of the Himalayas was spectacular. The reservoir was empty, and it was a popular place for us to meditate in because we had heard that the master was very fond of that place and often sat there. I was enjoying a sweet meditation when suddenly I was pulled out. I looked up and saw the master standing there. I was overjoyed. He looked concerned. He asked me if I wasn't cold. I said that I was wonderful, especially now that he was there. He smiled and left. I went back to my meditation, the sweetness within now doubled by the sweetness without. A half hour or so later, I was again pulled out, this time by Mohan, the master's driver, who was standing there with a tall glass of hot chai, tea boiled with milk and sugar in the Indian way. He cleared his throat and apologized for disturbing me, but the master had sent me this tea. Again overjoyed, I begged him to thank the master for me, and slowly savored my prasad tea while gazing at the incredibly beautiful Himalayas and reflecting on the sweet, sweet love of the master that expressed itself equally in great big things and in little, little things. I had never been happier. The next day we drove back to Delhi via Rishikesh, and the master visited his disciple and old friend, the Maharishi Raghavacharya, 112 years old in 1969. This great yogi gave every indication of being a man of 65. He had met the master in 1948, when he was in his 90s, and the master was meditating full-time in Rishikesh, preparing for the commencement of his mission. When they met, Raghavacharya, who was a widely respected and advanced yogi, was sitting with a group of his disciples. He astounded them by getting up and bowing down to the master. The master in turn treated Raghavacharya as a good friend, and while Raghavacharya did take initiation from the master and publicly acknowledged him as his guru, the master never treated him other than as an equal. To be with these two giants together was the encounter of a lifetime, and few orders have been more difficult to obey than that afternoon when he sent us off to Rishikesh to sightsee so that he could be alone with Raghavacharya. How I wanted to stay, but I went, as we all did, and had a thoroughly miserable time. The last day of my stay was November 2nd, 1969, and it so happened that a mammoth six-hour satsang was held that day to commemorate the 500th birthday of Guru Nanak. I woke up feeling ill, touch of dysentery, only the second occasion on that visit that I was sick, by the way. The first also only lasted a few hours, and terribly depressed over leaving him. These 6 weeks had been so beautiful, and I knew that he had once again irrevocably touched my life and it would never be quite the same again. I felt that I had been able to understand and appreciate him on a new level, and that many things that had been obscure before were now clear. I realized that my responsibilities had been greatly increased, and I had an intuition, in fact, that they would shortly be increased still more in ways that I could not anticipate. Sitting on the ground in the early hours of that giant satsang, before most of the crowd had arrived, watching the master on the dais, he seemed so humble, almost vulnerable to me. I remembered the time he had found me meditating outdoors in Rajpur and had sent me prasad tea. And suddenly the sense of his patient, painstaking, compassionate, infinitely caring love on the human level burst over me, and I began to weep. Great racking sobs that shook my body as all the gratitude and love that had built up over the 6 weeks struggled with the deep, deep grief over leaving him, and it all expressed itself at once. That night I left. I did not see him again physically for 2.5 years.
देखिए बात बड़ी है सोचन और समझन दी है गुरु हमेशा जिम्मेवार पूरा ही हुंदा है जेड़ा अधूरा है उदी कादी जिम्मेवारी है वो तो मन इंद्रियां दा गुलाम है उस दे मतलक महाराज सावन सिंह कहंदे हुंदे सी अंधा गुरु अंधा चेला नरका नरकी तक मत केला वो नरका च जाण दा जिम्मेवार ता है लेकिन आत्मा नु सामण दा जिम्मेवार नहीं.
Well, this is a matter of deep thinking and understanding. Only the perfect master is the responsible for the soul of the disciple. The incompetent or the imperfect master is not responsible. He cannot be responsible for the soul, because when he himself has become the slave of the mind and organs of senses, what can he do for the soul of the disciple? Master Saman Singh used to say, if the master is blind, the disciple also is blind, and both of them go to the hell. So such an imperfect master can be responsible for taking the soul to the hell, but he cannot be responsible for the liberation of the soul.
ਇਹ ਬੜੀ ਇੱਕ ਸੋਚਣ ਸਮਝਣ ਦੀ ਗੱਲ ਹੈ ਅਗਰ ਤਾਂ ਅਸੀਂ ਪੂਰੇ ਗੁਰੂਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਛੱਡ ਕੇ ਅਧੂਰੇ ਦੇ ਪਾਸ ਜਾਂਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਤਾਂ ਬਹੁਤ ਵੱਡਾ ਆਪਦੀ ਆਤਮਾ ਨਾਲ ਘਾਤ ਕਰ ਰਹੇ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਅਗਰ ਅਸੀਂ ਅਧੂਰੇ ਨੂੰ ਛੱਡ ਕੇ ਕਿਸੇ ਪੂਰੇ ਸੰਤ ਕੋਲੇ ਜਾਂਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਤਾਂ ਆਪਣੀ ਆਤਮਾ ਤੋਂ ਬਹੁਤ ਵੱਡਾ ਪਾਪਾਂ ਦਾ ਬੋਝਾ ਲਾ ਰਹੇ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਸਵਾਮੀ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਆ ਕਾਚੇ ਗੁਰ ਕੋ ਛੋਡੋ ਇਹ ਵੀ ਪਾਪ ਕਟਾ.
This is a matter of understanding. If we are leaving the perfect master and going to the imperfect master, then we are doing very bad for our soul. But if we are leaving the imperfect or incompetent master and going to the perfect master, we are removing a very heavy burden of our karmas from our soul. Swamiji Maharaj says that give up the imperfect master, and in this way you will get rid of one more big karma.
This person concerns the badness you are with me. You call yourself Ajay, Ajay the miserable one, and such light description. And I'm wondering whether the perfect master still describes himself or the condition of the rest of us.
ये आपके भजनों के बारे में है. आपने अपने भजन में कई दफा अपने आप को गरीब अजायब दुखी अजायब इस तरह के इस तरीके से अपने आप को बयान किया है. तो मैं ये जानना चाहता हूँ कि क्या एक पूरे गुरु को पूरे महात्मा को अपने आप को इस तरह से बयान करना चाहिए उस हालत में जो कि बाकी सब लोगों की हालत.
तुसी किसे भी पहुंचे हुए महात्मा दी शब्द लिखे पढ़ के देखो उदे विच निम्रता ही टपकदी होएगी और अपने आप नूं दास गरीब दुखिया ही बयान कीता हुंदा है.
Read the bhajans written by any perfect master and you will find same humility in all of those writings. They always describe themselves or call themselves as a slave, servant or the poor, the miserable one.
ਉਹਨੂੰ ਪਤਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਮੇਰੀ ਜ਼ਿੰਦਗੀ ਨੂੰ ਬਣਾਉਣ ਵਾਲਾ ਮੇਰਾ ਗੁਰੂ ਹੈ. ਗੁਰੂ ਮੇਰਾ ਸੁੱਚਾ ਸੀ ਸੱਚਾ ਸੀ ਉਸਨੇ ਹੀ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਸੱਚਾ ਸੁੱਚਾ ਬਣਾਇਆ ਹੈ ਤਾਂ ਆਪਣੇ ਆਪ ਨੂੰ ਉਹ ਕ੍ਰੈਡਿਟ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੈਂਦਾ ਗਾ. ਹਮੇਸ਼ਾ ਉਹ ਆਪਣੇ ਆਪ ਨੂੰ ਭੁੱਲ ਕੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੂੰ ਹੀ ਵਡਿਆਈ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਹੈ.
ਬਿਕੋਜ਼ ਹੀ ਨੋਜ਼ ਦੈਟ ਇਟ ਇਜ਼ ਹਿਜ਼ ਮਾਸਟਰ ਹੂ ਹੈਜ਼ ਮੇਡ ਹਿਜ਼ ਲਾਈਫ and he knows that his master is pure, is above all, he is highest, and it was only because of the grace of his master that he became good, he became perfect. So he does not take any credit to his own self. He always calls himself with the humble words and he always gives all the glory and credit to his master.
Kabir Sahib kende hai, bura dekhan main gaya, bura na milya ko, jab dekhya dil apna, mujh se bura na ko. Eda matlab eh ni ke Kabir Sahib bure san, o ta param sant kul malik san. ਲੇਕਿਨ ਇਹਦੇ ਵਿੱਚੋਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਦੀ ਨਿਮਰਤਾ ਟੱਕਦੀ ਹੈ ਸੰਤ ਤੁਰ ਤਾਮ ਸੱਚਖੰਡ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਪਹੁੰਚ ਕੇ ਵੀ ਹੀ ਦਮ ਨਹੀਂ ਮਾਰਦੇਗੇ
ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਸੈਡ ਦੈਟ ਆਈ ਵੈਂਟ ਸੀਕਿੰਗ ਫਾਰ ਦਾ ਬੈਡ ਬਟ ਆਈ ਡਿਡ ਨਾਟ ਫਾਈਂਡ ਐਨੀਵਨ ਬੈਡ ਵੈਨ ਆਈ ਲੁਕਡ ਇਨ ਮਾਈ ਓਨ ਵਿਦਿਨ ਆਈ ਫਾਊਂਡ ਦੈਟ ਆਈ ਵਾਸ ਵਰਸਟ ਆਫ ਆਲ ਦਿਸ ਡਸ ਨਾਟ ਮੀਨ ਦੈਟ ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਵਰਸਟ ਆਫ ਆਲ ਹੀ ਵਾਸ ਵੈਰੀ ਬੈਡ ਦਿਸ ਇਜ਼ ਹਿਸ ਹਿਊਮਿਲਿਟੀ ਦਾ ਪਰਫੈਕਟ ਸੇਂਟਸ ਇਵਨ ਆਫਟਰ ਰੀਚਿੰਗ ਦੀ ਓਰੀਜਨਲ ਹੋਮ ਇਵਨ ਆਫਟਰ ਰੀਚਿੰਗ ਆਵਰ ਰੀਅਲ ਹੋਮ ਸਟਿਲ ਕਾਲ ਦੈਮ ਸੈਲਵਸ ਐਜ਼ ਦਾ ਪੂਅਰ ਵਨਸ
ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਨਕ ਨੇ ਕਿਹਾ ਹੈ ਨਾਨਕ ਗਰੀਬ ਢਹਿ ਪਿਆ ਦੁਆਰੇ ਮੇਲ ਲਿਓ ਵਡਿਆਈ
ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਨਕ ਹੈਜ਼ ਸੈਡ ਦੈਟ ਪੂਅਰ ਨਾਨਕ ਹੈਜ਼ ਫਾਲਨ ਐਟ ਯੋਰ ਡੋਰ ਨਾਓ ਯੂਨਾਈਟ ਮੀ ਵਿਦ ਹਿਮ ਦਿਸ ਇਜ਼ ਯੋਰ ਗਲੋਰੀ
ਭਾਈ ਗੁਰਦਾਸ ਬੜੇ ਕਮਾਈ ਵਾਲੇ ਸਨ ਉਹ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਹਾਂ ਅਪਰਾਧੀ ਗੁਨਾਹਗਾਰ ਹਾਂ ਬੇਮੁਖ ਮੰਦਾ
ਭਾਈ ਗੁਰਦਾਸ ਹੂ ਵਾਸ ਅ ਗ੍ਰੇਟ ਮੈਡੀਟੇਟਰ ਸੇਜ਼ ਆਈ ਐਮ ਅ ਸਿਨਰ and I have done all the bad deeds, I am the worst of all, I am more bad than others.
ਇਹ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਿ ਉਹ ਬੇਮੁਖ ਸਨ ਉਹ ਮੰਦੇ ਸਨ ਨਹੀਂ ਇਹਦੇ ਵਿੱਚੋਂ ਬੜੀ ਇੱਕ ਝਲਕ ਪਿਆਰ ਦੀ ਸੱਚਾਈ ਦੀ ਝਲਕਦੀ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ
It does not mean that he was bad or he was not loyal to his master. This shows their love and the glimpse of their humility.
ਸਵਾਮੀ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਕਹਿੰਦੇ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਗੁਰੂ ਮੈਂ ਗੁਨਾਹਗਾਰ ਅਤਿ ਭਾਰੀ
ਸਵਾਮੀ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਸੇ ਦੇ ਰੋ ਮਾਸਟਰ I am the grave sinner of all.
ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਜਾ ਕੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੀ ਪੋਜੀਸ਼ਨ ਨੂੰ ਦੇਖਿਆ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਔਰ ਉਸ ਨਿਰਮਲ ਪਿਓਰ ਪਵਿੱਤਰ ਸਚਿਆਈ ਦੇ ਦੇਸ਼ ਵਿੱਚ ਗੁਰੂ ਹੀ ਲਿਜਾਣ ਵਾਲਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਇੱਥੇ ਅਸੀਂ ਮਾਤ ਲੋਕ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਵਿਸ਼ੇ ਬਕਾਰਾਂ ਦੇ ਭਰੇ ਦੇਸ਼ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਸਾਡੀ ਆਤਮਾ ਉਤਰੀ ਹੋਈ ਹੈ ਅਗਰ ਕੋਈ ਕੋਲਾ ਹੱਥ ਵਿੱਚ ਫੜ ਕੇ ਇਹ ਕਹੇ ਕਿ ਮੈਂ ਕਾਲਸ ਨਹੀਂ ਲੱਗਣ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਗਾ ਤੋ ਸਵਾਲ ਹੀ ਪੈਦਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਜਦੋਂ ਹੱਥ 'ਚ ਕੋਲਾ ਪਕੜਿਆ ਹੈ ਜ਼ਰੂਰ ਲੱਗਦੀ ਹੈ ਐਸੇ ਵਿਸ਼ੇ ਬਕਾਰਾਂ ਦੇ ਜੰਗਲ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚੋਂ ਬਚਾ ਕੇ ਲੈ ਜਾਣਾ ਇੱਕ ਪੂਰੇ ਗੁਰੂ ਦੀ ਹੀ ਵਡਿਆਈ ਹੈ ਹੋਰ ਤਾਂ ਸਾਡੇ ਕੋਲ ਕੋਈ ਧੰਨਵਾਦ ਕਰਨ ਦਾ ਜ਼ਰੀਆ ਨਹੀਂ ਸੱਚੇ ਦਿਲੋਂ ਸਾਡੀ ਆਤਮਾ 'ਚੋਂ ਆਪਣੇ ਆਪ ਹੀ ਆਵਾਜ਼ ਨਿਕਲ ਪੈਂਦੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਤੂੰ ਹੀ ਸੱਚਾ ਸੁੱਚਾ ਹੈ ਮੈਂ ਗਰੀਬ ਹੈ ਨਾਮ ਦਾ ਧਨ ਕੀ ਨੇ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਬਈ ਗੁਰੂ ਨੇ ਦਿੱਤਾ ਅਗਰ ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਮ ਦਾ ਧਨ ਨਾ ਦਿੰਦਾ ਤਾਂ ਇਹ ਜੀਵ ਕੰਗਾਲ ਹੀ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ
They have seen the real glory and real position of the Master after going in there within. And they have seen the truest, the purest, the holiest plane in the within. And they know that only because of the Master they were able to go to that plane. Because in this mortal world, in this physical plane, there are the dirts of the pleasures and there are the dirts of the worldly things. If anyone says that even after living in this world, he will remain pure, he will remain holy. That is not possible. It is exactly like if you have a piece of coal in your hand and if you say that you will not get any stain of it, you will not get your hands blackened. It is not possible. So the perfect ones, those who go in the vidhi, they know and they realize that it was the master who took them, saving from the dirts of the worldly pleasures and saving from the dirts of this world. Only it is because of the grace of the Master that they were able to go back to the real home. They were able to go to the purest abode. That is why they always express themselves as the poor ones, as the miserable ones, because they know that they could not do anything if it was not the grace of the Master. Because of this, they always give the glory to the Master. And because of that wealth of Naam, we were able to go to that highest place.
ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਨਕ ਨੇ ਕਿਹਾ ਕਿ ਸਾਰੀ ਦੁਨੀਆ ਰੋਗੀ ਹੈ ਨਾਮ ਦਾਰੂ ਹੈ ਉਸ ਨਾਮ ਨੂੰ ਪ੍ਰਾਪਤ ਕਰੇ ਬਗੈਰ ਅਸੀਂ ਮੈਲ ਦੇ ਭਰੇ ਹੁੰਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਲੇਕਿਨ ਨਾਮ ਸਤਿਗੁਰੂ ਨੇ ਪ੍ਰਗਟ ਕੀਤਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਪੈਦਾ ਕੀਤਾ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਹੈ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਉਹੀ ਨਾਮ ਦੇ ਨਾਲ ਜੋੜਦਾ ਹੈ
ਗੁਰੂ ਨਾਨਕ ਦੇਵ ਜੀ ਮਹਾਰਾਜ ਹੈਡ ਸੈਡ ਦੈਟ ਆਲ ਦ ਵਰਲਡ ਇਜ਼ ਸਿਕ ਐਂਡ ਨਾਮ ਇਜ਼ ਮੈਡੀਸਿਨ ਫਾਰ ਆਲ ਦ ਡਿਜ਼ੀਜ਼ We are full of the worldly dirts and Sadhguru has manifested that Naam within us and only He connects us with that pure and holy Naam.
ਇਹ ਠੰਡੇ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਮਸਲਾ ਸੋਚਣ ਵਾਲਾ ਹੈ ਹਰ ਸਤਸੰਗੀ ਨੂੰ ਫਰਜ਼ ਕਰੋ ਅਸੀਂ ਕਿਸੇ ਜੰਗਲ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰ ਭੁੱਲ ਜਾਂਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਜਿੱਥੇ ਕਿ ਸਾਡਾ ਕੋਈ ਆਪਣਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਗਾ। ਜੋ ਵੀ ਉੱਥੇ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਮਿਲਦਾ ਹੈ ਆਪਣੇ ਸਵਾਰਥ ਵਾਸਤੇ ਹੀ ਮਿਲਦਾ ਹੈ, ਲੇਕਿਨ ਸਾਡੀ ਕੋਈ ਰੱਖਿਆ ਕਰਨ ਵਾਲਾ ਨਹੀਂ। ਉੱਥੇ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਹਰ ਪਾਸੇ ਡਰ ਲੱਗਦਾ ਹੈ, ਮਾਰੇ ਮਾਰੇ ਫਿਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ। ਅਗਰ ਉਸ ਜਗ੍ਹਾ ਕੋਈ ਆਪਣਾ ਮਿਲ ਜਾਵੇ, ਉਹ ਸਾਡੀ ਮਦਦ ਕਰੇ, ਸਹਾਰਾ ਦੇ ਦੇਵੇ, ਔਰ ਉਸ ਦਾ ਕੋਈ ਅਭਿਆਨਾ ਵੀ ਨਾ ਮੰਗਦਾ ਹੋਵੇ, ਠੰਡੇ ਦਿਲ ਨਾਲ ਸੋਚੋ ਅਸੀਂ ਉਹਦਾ ਕਿੰਨਾ ਕੁ ਧੰਨਵਾਦ ਕਰਾਂਗੇ। ਵੱਧ ਤੋਂ ਵੱਧ ਤੈਅ ਦਿਲੋਂ ਧੰਨਵਾਦ ਕਰਾਂਗੇ। ਇਸੇ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਇਹ ਦੁਨੀਆ ਵੀ ਇੱਕ ਜੰਗਲ ਹੀ ਹੈ ਜਿਹਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਅਸੀਂ ਭੁੱਲੇ ਫਿਰਦੇ ਹਾਂ। ਇੱਥੇ ਸਾਡਾ ਆਪਣਾ ਕੋਈ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਗਾ। ਮਾਤਾ ਪਿਆਰ ਕਰਦੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਬੇਟਾ ਮੇਰੀ ਮਦਦ ਕਰੇਗਾ, ਵਡੇਪੇ ਦਾ ਸਹਾਰਾ ਹੋਏਗਾ। ਬੱਚਾ ਮਾਂ ਨਾਲ ਪਿਆਰ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਪਾਲੇਗੀ, ਮੈਨੂੰ ਦੁੱਧ ਪਿਲਾਏਗੀ, ਮੈਨੂੰ ਪੜ੍ਹਾਈ ਲਿਖਾਈ ਕਰਾਏਗੀ। ਔਰਤ ਪਤੀ ਨਾਲ ਪਿਆਰ ਕਰਦੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਮੇਰੀਆਂ ਜ਼ਰੂਰਤਾਂ ਪੂਰੀਆਂ ਕਰੇਗਾ। ਪਤੀ ਪਿਆਰ ਕਰਦਾ ਹੈ ਔਰਤ ਨਾਲ ਕਿ ਮੇਰੀ ਜ਼ਰੂਰਤਾਂ ਪੂਰੀਆਂ ਕਰੇਗੀ। ਸਾਰੇ ਗਰਜ ਦੇ ਵੱਧੇ ਹੈ। ਅਗਰ ਬੇਗਰਜ ਪਿਆਰ ਹੈ, ਤੁਸੀਂ ਦੇਖੋ ਇੱਥੇ ਰੁਲਦੇ ਫਿਰਦਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ ਜਿੱਥੇ ਕਿ ਕੋਈ ਸੌਖਾ ਸਾਹ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਕਿਸੇ ਨੂੰ ਆ ਰਿਹਾ, ਉਸ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਆ ਕੇ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਆਪਣਾ ਕੌਣ ਮਿਲਦਾ ਹੈ? ਗੁਰੂ। ਕਬੀਰ ਸਾਹਿਬ ਨੇ ਕਿਹਾ, ਦਿਲ ਦਾ ਮਹਿਰਮ ਕੋਈ ਨਾ ਮਿਲਿਆ, ਜੋ ਮਿਲਿਆ ਸੋ ਗਰਜੀ। ਗਰਜੀ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚ ਅਗਰ ਕੋਈ ਇਹ ਗਰਜ ਪਿਆਰ ਹੈ ਤਾਂ ਗੁਰੂ ਦਾ ਹੈ, ਜਿਹੜਾ ਸਵਾਏ ਭਜਨ ਸਿਮਰਨ ਤੋਂ ਸੇਵਕ ਤੋਂ ਹੋਰ ਕੋਈ ਦੁਨਿਆਵੀ ਆਸ਼ਾ ਨਹੀਂ ਰੱਖਦਾ ਗਾ। ਹੁਣ ਤੁਸੀਂ ਸੋਚ ਕੇ ਦੇਖ ਲਓ ਕੀ ਧੰਨਵਾਦ ਅਸੀਂ ਉਹਦਾ ਕਰ ਸਕਦੇ ਹਾਂ। ਇਹੀ ਕਰ ਸਕਦੇ ਹਾਂ ਕਿ ਅਸੀਂ ਰੁਲਦੇ ਫਿਰਦੇ ਸੀ, ਸਾਡੀ ਕੋਈ ਬਾਤ ਨਹੀਂ ਪੁੱਛਦਾ ਸੀਗਾ, ਤੂੰ ਹੀ ਆ ਕੇ ਸਾਡੀ ਬਾਂਹ ਫੜੀ, ਤੂੰ ਹੀ ਸਾਨੂੰ ਦੁਖੀ ਸੰਸਾਰ ਦੇ ਵਿੱਚੋਂ ਕੱਢਿਆ। ਹੋਰ ਕੋਈ ਜ਼ਰੀਆ ਹੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਹੁੰਦਾ ਗਾ। ਗੁਰੂ ਦਾ ਧੰਨਵਾਦ ਕਰਨ ਦਾ ਇਹੀ ਜ਼ਰੀਆ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਆਤਮਾ ਦੇ ਅੰਦਰੋਂ ਸੁੱਤੇ ਸਿੱਧੀ ਆਵਾਜ਼ ਨਿਕਲਦੀ ਹੈ। ਇਹ ਇੱਕ ਸਚਿਆਈ ਹੁੰਦੀ ਹੈ ਕਿ ਮੈਂ ਤਾਂ ਇਹ ਸੀ ਔਰ ਤੂੰ ਸੱਚਖੰਡ ਦੇ ਵਾਸੀ ਨੇ, ਮੇਰੇ ਤੇ ਰਹਿਮਤ ਕੀਤੀ, ਮੈਂ ਹੁਣ ਤੇਰਾ ਕਿਵੇਂ ਸ਼ੁਕਰਾਨਾ ਕਰਾਂ?
All the satsangi should think about this patiently. Just imagine if we have forgotten our way in a forest and we do not know which way to go and we do not have anyone whom we can call as our very own who could come and help us and show us the real way. If we meet anyone there, he is full of his own interest and nobody wants to help us. Everyone is trying to use us for his own selfish purpose and we are suffering there. We do not know which way to go and we are lost in that forest. If in that kind of situation we come across someone who comes to help us in a selfless way, who puts us on the real path and who helps us to get back to our home safely and happily, just imagine what we will feel for that person. We will be very grateful to him. At that time, for us, that person will be not less than God, because we know that if he had not come to help us in that forest where nobody was ready to help us and everybody was trying to take advantage of us, and this person came and selflessly he showed us the path, and we will become very grateful to him. We will not have any proud pride of our own strength. We will become very humble in front of him, because we will know that if he had not come to help us, we would have remained there and there were so many dangers over there. In the same way, in this world, we are forgotten. We do not know which way to go. We do not know that what is the road or which is the path which takes us back to our real home. And we are confused. Everyone is suffering in this world. Everyone whom we meet in this world, they are full of their own interest. They love us because they want something in return from us. If the mother loves the child, she loves the child expecting that when the child will grow up in her old age, he will help her, he will take care of her. If the child is loving the mother, he expects that the mother will feed him and the mother will give him good education and she will do everything for him. In the same way, if the husband is loving the wife, he is not doing it selflessly, he is doing that so that the wife would fulfill his desires. In the same way, if there is a wife and she loves the husband, she does not do it for the selfless reasons. She does it so that the husband would give her all the things she needs. So the meaning of saying this is that everyone in this world, all the worldly relations love us because they have some interest of their own. There is no one who loves us selflessly. It is only the master who loves us selflessly. He does not expect anything from us except the bhajan and simran. So when you know the real glory of the master, when you know that the love of the master is the selfless one and there is no other in this world who could love us selflessly, then without your making effort, this voice will come out from your within, from your soul, that, oh Lord, you are the great owner of the real home, Sachkhand. We were the poor ones wandering here and there in this suffering world, and only because of your grace and only because of your help, we were able to get back to our real home.
Kabir Sahib Kende hai.
That was from January 18th, 1986 in Bombay. A closing bhajan is on page 141, Guru Samananai Datta. There is no donor equal to the Guru in this world. The Guru gives the unseen thing. He tells you good things. Lust and anger have been imprisoned. Greed is also under his control. What you want to do tomorrow, do today. You will not get this company again. Then you will fall into the wheel of 84. Then you will suffer day and night. Shabad is proclaiming loudly, have the company of the saints. Worship and remember the Master. Then Kaul will bow before you. Kabir says, O Dharman, listen, obey my words. Open the curtain and meet the Guru and come into the divine kingdom. There is no donor equal to the Guru in this world. Bhajan of Kabir Sahib on page 141.
Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame, Guru Samana Nahi Data. Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame, Guru Samana Nahi Data. Vastu Agochara De Sata Guru Ne, Vastu Agochara De Sata Guru Ne. Pali bataye bata jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Kama karoda kai kararake, Kama karoda kai kararake, Loba kolino nata jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Kala kare so halahi karale, Kala kare so halahi karale, Firna mileye sata jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame,
Guru samana nahi data.
Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Chorasi mein jai paroge, Chorasi mein jai paroge, Fir bhugto din rata jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru samana nahi data jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Shabd pukar pukar kahete hai,
Shabd pukar
pukar kahete hai, Karle santana sata jagame, Guru samana nahi data. Guru Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Sumara Bandaki Kara Sahabaki Sumara Bandaki Kara Sahibaki Kalani Ve Mata Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data
Guru Samana Nahi
Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Kahi Kabira Suno Ai Dharaman Kahi Kabira Suno Ai Dharaman Mano Bachana Hamara Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Parada Kola Milo Sataguru Se Parada Kola Milo Sataguru Se Aula Kadayara Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data Guru Samana Nahi Data Jagame Guru Samana Nahi Data
There is no donor equal to the Guru in this world. May God bless us all.